Welcome back to Sermons. Last time we got up through Exodus 36:7, when after they took up the offering of the sanctuary, you know, the collection to build and furnish the tabernacle, they discovered that they had more than enough already to do the job. So Moses told everybody to stop bringing their offerings, stop bringing their precious and semi-precious metals and stones. I don't think I've ever heard of that happening in modern times, you know, in any modern church offering situation. And I wonder why. But, you know, let's pick it up now in Exodus 36:8, which begins a section that you're going to think you've heard already. And the reason you're going to think that is because, in a sense, you have heard it already. Back in Exodus chapters 25 through 28, when the Yahweh Elohim were instructing Moses about what they wanted the Israelites to construct for them. For instance, at the beginning of chapter 26, it says, "Moreover, thou shalt make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen, and blue and purple and scarlet. With cherubims of cunning work shalt thou make them." And now here in Exodus 36:8, it says, "And every wise-hearted man among them that wrought the work of the tabernacle made 10 curtains of fine twined linen, and blue and purple and scarlet. With cherubims of cunning work made he them." And when it gets repetitive like this, I'm just going to fade it out until some new object is being described or some new information is being introduced that wasn't already mentioned in the earlier instructions. And at that point, I'll fade it back in. I don't know why they felt like it was necessary to repeat all this stuff endlessly, but we've run into this several times before. They just go over and over stuff like this. It could be because before it was written down, it was an oral tradition that required memorization. And the more times you repeated something, the more likely you'd be to remember it later. If you're familiar with the Ray Bradbury novel, Fahrenheit 451, or with the François Truffaut movie that they made out of it, you'll remember that scene near the end when the people who have memorized entire books are wandering around repeating the text to themselves, you know, constantly reinforcing that memorization. And I can imagine the early Israelites doing the same kind of thing, reinforcing their memories of the specifications and commandments, you know, the ones that we've already seen in the Exodus, until they could be written down at a later date. Now, some authorities question whether the Hebrews even had writing at this time. But if that were the case, what would have been on those stone tablets that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai? Not once, but twice. The second time after he broke the first ones in a fit of rage. What language were those tablets written in, if not Hebrew? Well, Exodus says they were written with the finger of God, so maybe they were written in the tongue of God, too. Maybe the Yahwehians thought that we would figure out how to read them when we became advanced enough, kind of like what we hoped would happen with the so-called golden records that were put aboard the Voyager spacecraft, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. And if these tablets hadn't disappeared along with their container, maybe we would have figured it out eventually. We'll talk more about that container a little bit later. But let's go on. The length of one curtain was 20 and 8 cubits, and the breadth of one curtain 4 cubits. The curtains were all of one size, and he coupled the 5 curtains one unto another, and the other 5 curtains he coupled one unto another. And he made an hanging for the tabernacle door of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twined linen of needlework, and the five pillars of it with their hooks, and he overlaid their chapiters and their fillets with gold, but their five sockets were of brass. And now we're up to chapter 37, where the Ark of the Covenant is the first thing described. I'm not going to fade out on these descriptions at all. Not because they aren't repetitive, but because I'm planning to look at the Ark in detail and what happened to it in the next few episodes. It might even be helpful to take a gander at the Ark in the show art while it's being described. It's that object that the horny Moses is pointing at. Well, headlight Moses, actually. You know, headlights were still a popular alternative to horns or to the shining face when this illustration was done, which was back in the early 18th century. And Bezalel made the Ark of shittim wood. 2 cubits and a half was the length of it, and 1.5 cubits the breadth of it, and 1.5 cubits the height of it. And he overlaid it with pure gold within and without, and made a crown of gold to it round about. And he cast for it 4 rings of gold to be set by the 4 corners of it, even 2 rings upon the one side of it, and 2 rings upon the other side of it. And he made staves of shittim wood, and overlaid them with gold. And he put the staves into the rings by the sides of the ark, to bear the ark. And he made the mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits was the length thereof, and 1.5 cubits the breadth thereof. And he made 2 cherubims of gold, beaten out of 1 piece made he them, on the 2 ends of the mercy seat. 1 cherub on the end on this side, and another cherub on the other end on that side. Out of the mercy seat made he the cherubims on the 2 ends thereof. And the cherubims spread out their wings on high, and covered with their wings over the mercy seat, with their faces one to another, even to the mercy seatward were the faces of the cherubims. And he made the table of shittim wood. 2 cubits was the length thereof, and 1 cubit the breadth thereof, and 1.5 cubits the height thereof. And he made the vessels which were upon the table, his dishes, and his spoons, and his bowls, and his covers to cover withal, of pure gold. And he made the candlestick of pure gold. Of beaten work made he the candlestick, his shaft and his branch, his bowls, his knops and his flowers were of the same. Of 1 talent of pure gold made he it, and all the vessels thereof. And he made the incense altar of shittim wood. The length of it was 1 cubit, and the breadth of it 1 cubit. It was 4 square, and 2 cubits was the height of it. The horns thereof were of the same. And he made the staves of shittim wood, and overlaid them with gold. And he made the holy anointing oil and the pure incense of sweet spices, according to the work of the apothecary. And he made the altar of burnt offering of shittim wood. 5 cubits was the length thereof, and 5 cubits the breadth thereof. It was 4 square, and 3 cubits the height thereof. And he made the horns thereof on the 4 corners of it. The horns thereof were of the same, and he overlaid it with brass. This is the sum of the tabernacle, even of the tabernacle of testimony, as it was counted according to the commandment of Moses, for the service of the Levites by the hand of Ithamar, son to Aaron the priest. And Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that the Lord commanded Moses. And with him was Aholiab, son of Ahizamach, of the tribe of Dan, an engraver, and a cunning workman, and an embroiderer in blue, and in purple, and in scarlet, and fine linen. All the gold that was occupied for the work, and all the work of the holy place, even the gold of the offering, was 29 talents, and 730 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary. And the silver of them that were numbered of the congregation was 100 talents, and 1,730 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary. A beka for every man, that is, half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary, for everyone that went to be numbered, from 20 years old and upward, for 603,550 men. Now that's an odd way of saying it. 600,000 and 3,000, etc. Why not just say 603,000? Well, I don't know for sure, but for one thing, there are two different Hebrew words being translated as thousand in this passage, Aleph and Alephim. It says there were 600 Aleph and 3 Alephim, and so on. And we've run into this before, if you remember, when we were talking about how many Israelites made the journey across the desert or across the wilderness. If there were more than 600,000 adult male Israelites, why in the world would they have been intimidated by Pharaoh's puny little pursuing force? No matter how well-trained and well-equipped they were, or how ill-trained and ill-equipped the Israelites were. I mean, they could have, with that many, they could have rushed them, pulled them off their horses and their chariots and beaten them to death with their bare hands, you know. And, you know, they would have taken losses, but they had losses to spare. And if there were 600,000 adult male Israelites, there must have been 2 or 3 million people all told, plus all of their livestock, which makes it hard to imagine how they could even find a campsite, you know, big enough to encamp, much less survive across the wilderness. But Aleph can mean chiefs or leaders as well as thousands. So instead of meaning that there were 603,550 adult males, it might just mean that there were 600 chiefs commanding 3,550 warriors, in which case the chiefs would be kind of like squad leaders, I think, you know, commanding 5 or 6 men each. Now, I haven't done the math, the full math of what's going on here, but I'm told that if you do, the thousand interpretation actually works out. But, you know, who's to say that some well-meaning translator or scribe in the distant past didn't do the math, see that it didn't work out, and then correct the text so that it did? They shouldn't do that, but they did, I'm sure. Maybe not in this case, but I'm sure they did it in other cases. And of the 100 talents of silver were cast the sockets of the sanctuary and the sockets of the veil, and 100 sockets of the 100 talents, a talent for a socket. And of the 1,775 shekels, he made hooks for the pillars and overlaid their chapiters and filleted them. And the brass of the offering was 70 talents and 2,400 shekels. And therewith he made the sockets to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the brazen altar, and the brazen grate for it, and all the vessels of the altar, and the sockets of the court round about, and the sockets of the court gate, and all the pins of the tabernacle, and all the pins of the court round about. And of the blue and purple and scarlet they made cloths of service to do service in the holy place, and made the holy garments for Aaron, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he made the ephod of gold, blue, and purple, and scarlet, and fine twined linen. And they made coats of fine linen of woven work for Aaron and for his sons, and a mitre of fine linen, and goodly bonnets of fine linen, and linen breeches of fine twined linen, and a girdle of fine twined linen, and blue, and purple, and scarlet, of needlework, as the Lord commanded Moses. And they made the plate of the holy crown of pure gold, and wrote upon it a writing, like to the engravings of a signet, holiness to the Lord. Yeah, if they didn't have writing then, you know, what? How did they write this on the crown? And they tied unto it a lace of blue to fasten it on high upon the mitre, as the Lord commanded Moses. Thus was all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation finished, and the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So did they. And they brought the tabernacle unto Moses, the tent and all his furniture, his taches, his boards, his bars, and his pillars, and his sockets, and the covering of ram skins dyed red, and the covering of badger skins, and the veil of the covering, the ark of the testimony, and the staves thereof, and the mercy seat, the table, and all the vessels thereof, and the shewbread, the pure candlestick with the lamps thereof, even with the lamps to be set in order, and all the vessels thereof, and the oil for light, and the golden altar, and the anointing oil, and the sweet incense, and the hanging for the tabernacle door, the brazen altar, and his grate of brass, his staves, and all his vessels, the laver, and his foot, the hangings of the court, his pillars, and his sockets, and the hanging for the court gate, his cords, and his pins, and all the vessels of the service of the tabernacle, for the tent of the congregation. You can see all this stuff in the show art if you look around. The cloths of service to do service in the holy place, and the holy garments for Aaron the priest, and his son's garments to minister in the priest's office. According to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel made all the work. And Moses did look upon all the work, and behold, they had done it as the Lord had commanded, even so had they done it. And Moses blessed them. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, On the first day of the first month shalt thou set up the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation, and thou shalt put therein the ark of the testimony, and cover the ark with the veil. And thou shalt bring in the table, and set in order the things that are to be set in order upon it. And thou shalt bring in the candlestick, and light the lamps thereof. And thou shalt set the altar of gold for the incense before the ark of the testimony, and put the hanging of the door to the tabernacle. And thou shalt set the altar of the burnt offering before the door of the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation. And thou shalt set the laver between the tent of the congregation and the altar, and shalt put water therein. And thou shalt set up the court round about, and hang up the hanging at the court gate. And thou shalt take the anointing oil, and anoint the tabernacle, and all that is therein, and shalt hallow it, and all the vessels thereof, and it shall be holy. And thou shalt anoint the altar of the burnt offering, and all his vessels, and sanctify the altar, and it shall be an altar most holy. And thou shalt anoint the laver and his foot, and sanctify it. And thou shalt bring Aaron and his sons unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and wash them with water. And thou shalt put upon Aaron the holy garments, and anoint him, and sanctify him, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office. And thou shalt bring his sons, and clothe them with coats. And thou shalt anoint them, as thou didst anoint their father, that they may minister unto me in the priest's office. For their anointing shall surely be an everlasting priesthood throughout their generations. Thus did Moses, according to all that the Lord commanded him, so did he. And it came to pass in the first month, in the second year, on the first day of the month, that the tabernacle was reared up. And Moses reared up the tabernacle, and fastened his sockets, and set up the boards thereof, and put in the bars thereof, and reared up his pillars. And he spread abroad the tent over the tabernacle, and put the covering of the tent above upon it, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he took and put the testimony into the ark, and set the staves on the ark, and put the mercy seat above upon the ark. When it says he put the testimony into the ark, I'm pretty sure it means the two replacement stone tablets or tables, not the ones that he broke in a fit of rage. And when it says he set the staves on the ark, that probably means that, just like the Devo's suburban robots who monitor reality, he shoved the poles in the holes, the poles in through the rings to carry it with, because you were supposed to leave those in there for some reason. Maybe we'll figure that out. And he brought the ark into the tabernacle and set up the veil of the covering and covered the ark of the testimony as the Lord commanded Moses. And he put the table and the tent of the congregation upon the side of the tabernacle northward without the veil. And he set the bread in order upon it before the Lord as the Lord had commanded Moses. You always need to have bread on the table. It'd be nice to have a little butter with it, too. You don't get ice water anymore unless you specifically ask for it. And he put the candlestick in the tent of the congregation over against the table on the side of the tabernacle southward. And he lighted the lamps before the Lord as the Lord commanded Moses. And he put the golden altar in the tent of the congregation before the veil, and he burnt sweet incense thereon, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he set up the hanging at the door of the tabernacle, and he put the altar of burnt offering by the door of the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation, and offered upon it the burnt offering and the meat offering, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he set the laver between the tent of the congregation and the altar, and put water there to wash withal. And Moses and Aaron and his sons washed their hands and their feet thereat. When they went into the tent of the congregation, and when they came near unto the altar, they washed, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he reared up the court round about the tabernacle and the altar, and set up the hanging of the court gate. So Moses finished the work. Then a cloud covered the tent of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. So again, with the smoke and the fire, or at least the cloud and the light, because the glory of the Lord probably means a bright light. And Moses was not able to enter into the tent of the congregation, because the cloud abode thereon, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And when the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle, the children of Israel went onward in all their journeys. But if the cloud were not taken up, then they journeyed not till the day that it was taken up. For the cloud of the Lord was upon the tabernacle by day, and fire was on it by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel throughout all their journeys. Just like it was when they were being led out of Egypt and across the wilderness, by seeing the active volcano in Midian. But now the cloud and the light were being produced artificially rather than naturally by the volcano. And this is the end of the book of Exodus. Even though it's not the end of what is popularly called the Exodus, because the Israelites are still on their journey to the promised land. They still got a long way to go. And because, of them still being in the middle of the Exodus, when Exodus ends, I was in kind of a quandary about what to do next for a while, because I didn't know whether to move straight ahead with the next book, Leviticus, or use the end of Exodus as a jumping off point, kind of like I used the first few verses of Genesis 6 as a jumping off point to the book of Enoch. When the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, you remember that. And I went and got the full story from the book of Enoch. First Enoch, the book that's still in the official Bible of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. And oddly enough, The book that I want to jump to this time is another Ethiopian sacred text, although it's not a part of their canonical, you know, official Bible. It's called the Kebra Nagast. Now, I have no affiliation with or connection to the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. And as far as I know, I don't have a drop of Ethiopian blood in my veins. Not that it would matter to me if I did. But for some reason, I seem to be drawn to their religious books and traditions. The Kebra Nagast tells the story of when the so-called Queen of Sheba, an Ethiopian queen named Makeda, paid a state visit to King Solomon, and, you know, of what happened between them and how that eventually led to the disappearance of the Ark. The visit's also mentioned in a couple of different books of the Bible, and we'll look at those references too, as well as to other biblical references to what happened to the Ark of the Covenant after the end of the book of Exodus. And when we get to what happened between Solomon and Makeda, we'll also have an excursion into the Song of Solomon, probably the sexiest book of the Bible, guaranteed to make you even hornier than Moses. And for those upcoming episodes, the Exodus theme that I've been using is no longer appropriate. So I've selected new theme music. It's from Act 3 of George Frederick Handel's Solomon Oratorio, the section called The Arrival of the Queen of Sheba. Now, this music was written way back in 1748, or published in 1748, probably written in a year or two before that. So it's safely in the public domain. But it's difficult to find a performance of it that isn't fully protected by copyright. However, I was able to locate a performance by the Accordion Ensemble Arte that I can use with simple attribution. Now, true, this is a performance using accordions and a bass accordion instead of oboes and strings, but I've kind of been a fan of the accordion ever since I went to a Weird Al Yankovic concert back in, I think, 1984, in which he pointed out that the accordion was the official rock instrument of the 1984 Olympics. He also put one leg up behind his head and did the pogo on the other leg while playing the accordion, which I found rather impressive. I doubt if he could still do that. He's talented, though probably not as talented as the Weird Al biopic makes him out to be. I just recently saw that. He's not talented enough to actually kill El Chapo by throwing a CD into his forehead. But anyway, the next music you hear will be the Accordion Ensemble Arte with The Arrival of the Queen of Sheba from Handel's Solomon. And that will be our new theme music starting next episode. Until then, keep the faith, even if it's the Ethiopian Orthodox faith. Hey, maybe especially if it's the Ethiopian Orthodox faith.